Brooke Pryor of ESPN, our Steelers insider, and somebody who we like having on this show a great deal. Hi, Brooke.
Hello. I can't believe that it's been such a newsy week in Pittsburgh. I go to Bristol for a couple of days. I come back. There's a new quarterback, which we knew was going to happen. A new GM, which we knew was going to happen at some point. But, man, I came back to a whole new Pittsburgh.
How was the Bristol car wash? It was your first experience, right?
It was my first experience with everything open. And, I mean, I've worked there going on my fourth season now, but this is the first time I've been on campus as, like, a full employee, not going through rookie camp, as we call it, where they show you, hey, here's how your computer works and here's how to get into your email. It was great to be at the mothership. The cafe is as good as everyone says, and the weather was perfect, so I can't complain.
Do they actually have in the cafe the thing where they shot the Arnold Palmer commercial where he's doing the he's filling up half iced tea, half lemonade, and his caddy's there helping him out?
No, I wish. I was actually talking with people up there about it. They said that that's the old cafeteria, and that one is closed now. I know. So now we just have, like, the new modern one. But, I mean, it's still pretty cool. I was walking through getting my sandwich and walked right by Randy Scott, and we had a conversation. So it was kind of – it was really cool and kind of weird to walk by people that, like, I talk to either in my ear or see on my TV, and there they are in real life.
Did anybody want to just, like, pull you aside, like any diehard Steelers fans behind the scenes up there, and beg you for intel on what's happening with this team? Anybody just, you know, say, hold on, Brooke, we need to ask you about Omar Khan, please.
It usually wasn't about Omar Khan. People were a little bit more concerned about that whole quarterback thing. Like,
are Kenny Pickett's hands really that small in person? Is it going to matter?
What's with the two gloves thing? What about Mitch Trubisky? Yeah, it was all like, how do you feel you're doing? How's everything going? So the quarterbacks in Pittsburgh, what the heck? That was generally how my conversations went.
What did you make of Omar Khan's introductory press conference today? Your, like, biggest takeaway from it?
You know, I really liked that he did say, hey, not much is changing. I did think it was interesting. I don't know that he loves the label that we all tend to give him as he's just the cap guy. I actually had a few minutes to talk with him afterward, and he said, I said, how do you want to be described? And he said, well, I'd like to think I'm well-rounded. And he reminded me that when he got started in New Orleans, he was on the personnel side. He was a personnel intern. So he doesn't have necessarily the same strong rooted background in scouting that, you know, Kevin Colbert had or Brandon Hunt had. Obviously we all know another candidate who's now headed to Philly, but I think that he wants to make clear that, hey, I'm very good at the money and the numbers and the finance and all of that stuff, but he can do the other things too. But he also recognizes, yeah, as good as I am at numbers and I think that I can be, you know, scout talent a little bit, he's also putting the people around him that can help him with any shortcomings he has or areas where he doesn't quite have as much experience. And that's why he said he's elevating Andy Weidel, Sheldon White. So I think that he's building a staff that complements what he can already do.
What kind of actual – so it's interesting to me. The most interesting thing about this hire or this promotion of Khan, Brooke, is that they do the stability move here. It's a guy that Art Rooney even said in his introduction of Khan. He's like, we're very comfortable with him. He's comfortable with us. And yet – they really are upsetting the apple cart a little bit on the back end just because he doesn't have as much personnel experience as a lot of GMs or as his predecessor did. And so I'm wondering how he might want to be viewed as a guy, no, I'm more well-rounded, but how much input do you think he'll really have or want to have with that aspect of the job versus how much maybe gets delegated to Andy Weidel to be the main personnel guy on that side?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think he'll be involved. I don't want to say that he's going to be totally hands-off or anything like that, but I do think that delegate is a good word with Andy Weidel, with the other guys. I think Mike Tomlin will continue to have a big role in the talent evaluation, maybe an even bigger role now with Kevin Colbert, not GM. I was told that they expect Kevin Colbert to stay on for a year or two in a role that one of those haven't quite figured it out yet. Omar didn't say what they were going to do with him, but I would expect him to stay around. So I don't think that Omar is going to come in and try to strong arm any personnel decisions. I really think that it's going to be a collaborative situation where he is going to lean on the people that he's bringing in. Because if he did want to come in and say, nope, I'm the GM now, I'm going to make all these decisions, there would be really no point in adding Andy or any of these other people to the front office if he was going to say, ugh, I don't actually want to hear what you have to say. So I think that it's going to be, you know, in the past couple years, actually for past long time, it's been the three-headed monster between Art Rooney, Kevin Colbert, and Mike Tomlin, and now I think there's going to be more seats at the table.
Brooke Pryor, ESPN, joining us right now on the PM team. Brooke, the other thing that I've brought up consistently about this hire is the one thing I see with Khan is there, and he was kind of playing coy, at least that's what I thought when he talked about, oh, I've got some cool things I want to do, but not a whole lot different, but I'm not going to say them publicly anyway because they're my secrets, nah, like that sort of thing today. I want one of them to be a little bit more of an analytical sort of methodology with the draft in the way, like, say, Howie Roseman in Philly, just to use another Philly guy right now, the way he works it. Do you have any sense of what you can, or a guess as to what Khan's little tweaks and twists on the role are going to be versus Colbert?
You know, I wish that I knew. I you know, it's funny because in my head when I think about Omar Khan as a GM, I do kind of compare him to a Howie Roseman because he doesn't have that traditional scouting background that we've seen across the league for a long, long time. But I don't know what those specific tweaks are going to be. You know, I tried to ask him afterward too, and he's guarding that very closely. But I will be interested to see if the Steelers modernize anything about the way that they draft, that they build teams, that kind of thing, because they've been very old school for a long time. I mean, even just this year, while everyone else is trading away draft picks to bring in veterans, the Steelers are holding on to everything they have. But I don't have a sense of exactly what Omar Khan will do to modernize things. But I think that they are open to those ideas. And I also think that that's why they brought in so many candidates to talk with them, is that they had an opportunity to kind of source a lot of ideas, try to, you know, jumpstart, brainstorm some other ideas. And so why not ask some of the league's best and brightest and adjust how they're going to do things going forward.
Brooke, do you have a sense of who, along with Khan, were like of the second interview group, so the six finalists, I guess, do you have any sense of, or have you been hearing that it was down to Khan and somebody else, like that there might have been, even among those finalists, a final two or three that it boiled down to for them? Or was there even like that much of a level of kind of paring down the list?
Yeah, you know, I don't know how they would have ordered it, how they would have stood on a medal podium, but I do think that it is telling that Doug Whaley got a second interview. I think that he, from what I was told about the process, I think they were very impressed with him, and that if they did want to go with a traditional GM hire, that he would have been their guy. But I don't know what that would have meant then for the construction of the rest of the department, because the thing is, they didn't want to lose Omar Khan. I don't think they wanted to lose Brandon Hunt, but they weren't able to hold on to both of those guys, and then they end up doing kind of essentially a trade with Philly to bring in Andy Weidel, because I think that there was a scenario in which they wanted to hire Omar Khan as a GM and have Brandon Hunt in that kind of assistant role. Obviously, that didn't work out, but the sense that I get is that Doug Whaley was a very strong candidate. I don't know how close they would have been to actually giving him that title, but I know they were very interested in him. That's why they brought him in, and they really liked what he had to say.
So you said if they had gone with a more traditional personnel guy, he might well have been their pick?
I think so. I don't want to say that, you know, we go in the upside down, or we look at, you know, the alternative universe and he's the guy, but I think he made a very compelling case for general manager.
Where do you think they go from here as far as if there are any moves that they continue to make to round out the front office that Khan kind of alluded to? It's a fluid situation, a lot of moving parts. Do you expect there to be any more dominoes that fall and things that come into more clear focus in the next couple of days?
You know, I think that there's maybe four or five titles under Khan that they're looking at. They have three of those guys right now. I could see them adding maybe one or two other ones, but I think the major ones are the ones that he announced today with Weidel, White, and elevating Dan Colbert. But I could see maybe one or two other ones, but I don't have a sense of who those guys are, who's on the short list for that.
Brooke, I've got a couple. Well, you know what we like to do here. We talk a little bit about sports, yes, but then we get right into the nitty gritty. Pony's not here. He's trying to speak French up in Quebec City with his wife. Donnie's just here doing his thing. He doesn't have a wife or a girlfriend right now. And, well, he's wearing a Gold's Gym t-shirt and gym shorts to work, so I don't know if either of those things changing anytime soon. So Mary Hours, who does obviously the weather, KDKA-TV. Now, she had a home date night planned with her husband last night. I was greeted by a tweet that tagged me, tagged Pony, at 6 a.m. that I saw this, that her husband had sort of kicked date night at home to the curb, even though they had gotten the kids in bed early. They were munching on burgers and fries. And what was he doing on date night? He was staring down at a clip from our show that had been posted to Twitter and watching it, completely ignoring Mary. If you were scheduling like a home date night, you and Teddy were going to just hang out, have a relaxing night, but the whole point was a stay-in date night, and he is watching tweets of our show. What is your reaction?
I'm probably not real happy, but the thing is, as much as I want to be like, gosh, that's terrible, if we do a home date night, I am likely the one that, you know, I got a tweet alert, I need to check something, and then the next thing I know, I'm in a rabbit hole, and I have disappeared on the couch for 2 hours. So, unfortunately, I get it, but we're trying to be better about that. But sometimes, I mean, look, home date nights are great, but also, I think a big part of the date night is, like, getting dressed up, going out to eat. Like, if we're going to do a date night, we sit at the dinner table, and, like, I actually clean the dinner table off and, like, take all the shoes off of it that we have up there hiding from our dogs.
The shoes?
And we, like, make an effort. Yes. Oh, I can see 3 pairs of shoes on our dinner table right now. It's not great. If you come over to my house, make sure that I wipe it down with, like, a Clorox wipe first.
Could you put them in, like, a closet or anything?
Oh, that makes too much sense. The dinner table is much more convenient on short notice.
Are either of you, so, like, big shoe people where there's just tons of, like, you collect shoes? Like, what are we talking about here? 20 pairs on the table?
No, just 3. I've got a pair. Hootie, our golden doodle, is particularly fond of my shoes. He chewed through 3 pairs of the exact same sandal that I kept buying, forgetting to put away. And then he'd find one of them and chew it. And so, yeah, so we have some various shoe storage places around our apartment, but worst case scenario, they go on the table. And, well, it's not really worst case scenario, most likely scenario, because we're lazy. So that's, but when we clean that off, that signals date night, and that signals I got to put my phone away. And if either one of us got it out, we would have to have a conversation about it.
It has to be a thing with the golden doodles and shoes, because all of our shoes, when that dog gets mad when both of us leave, we find multiple shoes on the couch, usually not chewed through, just brought there as sort of a prize. But then here's the problem. We can't, like, sternly talk to or even raise our voices to that dog, because if he knows he did something wrong, that's Larry, by the way, who does this, he'll pee right on the rug out of, like, inexplicable fear. Not like that we're mean dog owners, we're not, but he just pees when he knows he's being reprimanded wherever he's at.
Oh no, that's our golden doodle just looks so sad, and then your heart breaks. You're like, you know what, take my shoe, it's yours. He is also a very big shoe relocator. He likes to chew through my shoes, but he takes Teddy Sperry's by the door, and inevitably when we come back, one's in the middle of the living room, one's in the dining room. He's also a big sock hoarder. I don't know what it is about doodles and, like, feet things, but there's something that happened there when they were being developed that is programmed in their brain.
Yeah, well, the thing we did now so he won't pee is I kind of give him the old look, like, you know I'm disappointed in you, right, man? And he kind of looks back like, yeah, I know. You have good reason to be. And then we kind of move on from it. So it has made me a more patient person, because now I know I can't yell. And I just leave out, like, $5 Costco Crocs and sort of, like, lean towards that direction. I'm like, here, buddy, take the camo Crocs, buddy. You can do whatever you want with these. But, yeah, it's not uncommon if we come home after a couple hours out for, like, 6 shoes to be on the couch. So,
but see, the solution there is just put them on the dining table, on the dinner table, and then they won't end up on the couch.
You know what? I don't know why we didn't think of that before. That really, necessity is the mother of invention, Brooke.
You guys are so welcome. I'm glad that I can save your shoes with the dinner table storage option.
Brooke Breyer, ESPN, thanks so much. Great to talk to you as always.